Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
That is just a fact of life.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history, Pedro Fernandez.
Woo, it's going to be good.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the World Boxing Council. Austin imitated but never duplicated 37, make that 38 plus years now, of knocking out all bums on the radio. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. I'm also a four-time Golden Glove champion, so back in the day I could fight a little bit, or allegedly. And of course, I'm an award-winning writer, so I can write a little bit as well. So I can fight, I can write, but I don't know everything. Therefore, I'm going to open the phone lines up all around the world, give you a shot here. You can show me up, tell me what you know about the world of boxing, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. The text number, 1-415-275-1613. That's 1-415-275-1613. Of course, 24 hours removed. Take that back. 18 hours removed from the Undisputed World Junior Welterweight Championship. We'll talk about Josh Taylor winning a unanimous nod after 12 rounds. Of course, Josh come to us undefeated from the UK. 17 and zip. Left 18 and zip. Unanimous decision win over Jose Ramirez, coming to us from Central California and Texas. Of course, a good fighter, no doubt about that. Came in at 27 and zip. Got dropped in the sixth and seventh round. The seventh round really hard. The bottom line was he showed a lot of grit and determination to complete the fight. But at the end of the night, no doubt about that, Josh Taylor was the winner. The scorecards, 114-112, which I thought were a bit charitable to Mr. Ramirez. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You know, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. After the break, we'll talk some boxing news. We'll bring in brain doctor, Dr. Netan Sethi, at about 22 minutes past the hour. And, of course, boxing PhD Socrates Palmer joins us at 40 minutes past the hour. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council, right here on Sports Byline.
God bless America, Pedro! Sports Byline! Hey, baby!
The great one, Don King, the wire-haired wonder, no doubt about that. Of course, going to turn 90, I believe, August 20th or 21st, 2021. I talked to him about a month and a half, 2 months ago. He was real brief, of course, defending Donald Trump and still, and implying the fact that the entire boxing world is against him and, you know, he's been screwed over for years and this kind of stuff. And I said to myself, you're a billionaire black man that was a convicted felon, a former murderer. I mean, the bottom line is you got pardoned for murder. I mean, how bad of a hand can you get dealt to be a billionaire black man in the world of boxing, making all that money and being dealt a bad hand? I don't think he was dealt a bad hand. Of course, that was just Don King talking his smack. Next week, Jorge Linares, who is a former, a pretty good fighter, 47-5. The knock on those five losses were all of them stopped by inside the distance. Got 29 KOs, of course. He's the opponent for WBC lightweight champion, or one of the lightweight champions. Talk about Devin Haney, 25-0, 15 knockouts, coming to us from the city by the bay, now living in Las Vegas. Of course, a big believer in the snack training, sports nutrition for advanced, bottom line is Victor Conti's product line down there. But he's going to take on Jorge Linares. Of course, this is a bit of a, people think it's a work fight for Mr. Haney. Of course, he showed unbelievable hand skills a couple fights ago. But then again, in that last fight, when he took on Yuri Gamboa in November of 2020, I wasn't all that impressed. I mean, Terrence Crawford knocked him down like four or five times in the fight. It was like an elevator ride for Yuri Gamboa when he fought the aforementioned Mr. Crawford. I mean, up, down, up, down, up, down. And then, so he goes into this fight. He said, Devin Haney goes into this fight, says, I'll knock him down more than Crawford did. Well, you never knock Yuri Gamboa down once. I think he hurt him might have once or twice, but nothing severe. Anyway, the bottom line is he is 25 and zip. I would have to say he's probably a prohibitive favorite, probably a 3 or 4 to 1 favorite, if not more, over Jorge Linares. Of course, it's going down May the 29th on The Zone. Now, Ryan Garcia, my favorite lightweight, no doubt about that. Another WBC title holder trying to figure out that maze at 135 pounds. But, of course, he is on the shelf right now having emotional issues. Mauricio Sulaiman, the president of the World Boxing Council, said that he heard that he was back in training and things seemed to be going in the right direction for him. So we wish him the very best. But the lightweight champion is in action real soon. I'm talking about Teofimo Lopez, the man, the franchise champion of the WBC. I mean, 16 is zip, 12 KOs, of course, coming off that thumping of Vasyl Lomachenko. Of course, Lomachenko is going to take on Mr. Nakatomi, Masashi Nakatomi. That's going to go down in a couple of months anyway. Lomachenko coming back off the milk carton. I mean, I hadn't seen him for months. He was on the side of milk cartons. He was missing in action. Anyway, George Kambosos Jr., 19 and zip, comes to us from the down under world of Australia and New Zealand. Of course, he's going to take on Lopez. This fight's going to go down on the zone as well. Of course, that's going to go down the 19th of June. And then a week later, it's going to be Gervonta Davis, another guy that has a claim somewhere between 130 and 140 pounds. I think he's got the WBA 130 pound strap, the WBA 135 pound strap, and now he's going after the WBA 140 pound strap. He's taking on a kid from Texas, I think it's Mario Barrios or something like that. Barrios is undefeated, but I don't think that Davis and these guys will be going after a guy they didn't think they could beat. So Davis is a slight favorite going into this fight, but he is moving up two weight classes as far as his last fight was concerned. Of course, that was 130 pounds, and that was a good performance. No doubt about that. I think that his peak, his best fight will probably be his best fighting weight for Gervonta Davis. Call him Tank, will probably be at 130 pounds because he always looked like a chubby 135 pounder. But then again, discipline has always been his lack. It's been his lack. I mean, he's had problems outside the ring. I mean, car accident. It was a car wreck he got into in November or October of last year. Of course, a hit and run car accident. He was indicted by a grand jury. When a grand jury jumps in and indicts you for a car accident, I think you're in some type of trouble. Anyway, bottom line is we'll see how that fares out. But Davis is going to take on a 140 pound champion. It looks like June 26th on pay-per-view. And the question is, can he get anybody to watch him on pay-per-view? Are boxing fans that starved that they will spend money on a pay-per-view like that? Who knows? Of course, this is a promotional gamble, but most of these guys that gamble are gambling with other people's money, so it's no big thing. Now, 135 pounds, without a doubt, Lopez is king. Who's next? I don't know. Is it Gervonta Davis, Lomachenko, of course, the former champion, Richard Comey? I'd have to eliminate him from that mix. Devin Haney? What is Ryan Carson? No, Teofimo Lopez calls Devin Haney the email champion because he never beat anybody for the title. They just gave it to him. So, Devin Haney. Ryan Garcia, George Kambosos, the rest of the guys in the top 15 as far as lightweight's concerned are really no names. So we've got these top stars, Lopez, Davis, Lomachenko, and Haney. What's going to happen? And Ryan Garcia with an asterisk because of the emotional issues. What's going to happen there? 135 pounds is the way to go. No doubt about that. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live. Why check it? Your inside look into the world of boxing and mixed martial arts. Coming up next, our brain doctor. That's right, Dr. Netan Sethi, of course, my man when it comes to telling us about boxing, the effects of boxing, how to make boxing safer, how to make training safer. We'll talk about that in depth with New York's top boxing doctor from the New York State Athletic Commission. I'm talking about Dr. Sethi next up on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC with Pedro Fernandez.
Mighty Tower of Power. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, your inside look in the world of boxing and combat sports. On the line from New York City, I believe, the preeminent doctor in the world of boxing and brains. I'm talking about Dr. Netan Sethi, of course, coming to us from Cornell University, New York Presbyterian Hospital. He's an associate professor of neurology. I can go on and on, but the bottom line is it would take me an hour to read his resume. Bottom line is, Doc, how are you?
I'm good, Pedro. How are you? How's your health? How's family?
I'm excellent. I mean, everybody's taking the vaccine out here. So, I mean, California seems to be on the road to recovery. We're starting to open things up. I hope to be able to promote a dance for some people in July and then September and then in October. So, well, I mean, I'm looking for good things. I'm hoping the world's coming back here.
Excellent. I'm glad you're in good health, yes. And the same thing in New York. We are slowly but surely opening up.
Okay. As a doctor, how's this coronavirus affected you and your family? I mean, you see patients, and is there a certain risk involving seeing patients during the coronavirus and all that kind of good stuff, or what?
Yes, Pedro, you know, when the pandemic hit us in New York City in the beginning of, like, March, April last year, it kind of hit us like a tsunami. I mean, and before we knew it, so many New Yorkers were sick, as you're probably aware of. A lot of members from our boxing family got sick. Some of them, unfortunately, lost their battle to this disease. Mm-hmm. For me personally, Francisco Mendez, brother to me, I used to train in Mendez boxing. He unfortunately lost his battle to COVID. So for doctors, you know, we were all redeployed to help out, help manage the COVID crisis. Some of us were sent to the emergency room. Some of us were redeployed to ICU settings. And it was tough time. And I think that New York City really took the brunt of it. And I'm glad things are better now, and we're hoping that boxing and MMA comes back to New York State soon.
Okay. Boxing had packed 73,000 people into a Dallas stadium a couple weeks ago. Some people thought that wasn't too smart, considering most people weren't wearing masks. So I'm going to go with my last pandemic question for you. I'm continuing to wear the mask for the most part in public. Do you think that's a smart thing to do, Doc?
I do. I think first and foremost, we should encourage people to get vaccinated. A lot of people are still hesitant about getting vaccinated. We should try to find out why are they hesitant. Try to address
politics. Doc, I hate to interrupt you, but my blood brother discovered me through DNA and genealogy about 3 years ago. And he's had a liver transplant. We had a lot of alcoholics in the family, but he had a liver transplant. So, I mean, science saved his life, right? He won't get the vaccine because he told me Bill Gates put a chip in it.
Right. So, you know, there are a lot of these concerns going around, health concerns. The vaccine will make me sick. Some people like these concerns about having a chip. They're going to, you know, it's going to change my genetic code. You know, I can sustain, like, your program, the way you're talking about it. That helps to allay people's anxiety. So vaccination, I think, is the backbone on which the world will open up. And then I personally, answering your question, I would say, yes, wear a mask. There's no harm in wearing a mask, especially when you are in a crowded arena. In fact, I think that should be the recommendation. This disease is strange because you have to not just protect yourself, you have to protect others around you. And so, you know, it's kind of a collective responsibility. Everybody in the arena is protecting everybody else. I think that's just being sensible about it.
Okay. Dr. Nitin Sethi is our guest, of course, the Associate Professor of Neurology at New York Presbyterian Hospital and Cornell Medical Center as well. I got to ask you some questions. You know, as far as boxing is concerned, I used to watch guys get whooped up in the gym. And I used to whoop up on guys in the gym. In fact, I was a bit of a monster in the gym. And because I felt that you had to fight at the same, you had to train at the same speed you fought at. Some people disagreed with that method, but I didn't. Anyway, the bottom line is a lot of guys took lumps in the gym that probably bordered on concussions. Is that where most of the damage is being done, or a lot of damage is being done in training?
Well, Pedro, that's where I think the concern is raised, that are boxers suffering head injuries, concussions while they're training? And this just does not just apply to professional boxers. It might apply to people who are doing amateur boxing. And I think the reason why it's important to talk about this subject is because these concussions and head injuries can be prevented. I mean, a sparring, a training camp, you know, these are controlled environment. Everything is controlled. It's not like it's not a fight going on where things are not under your control. So if you are sparring, you have a trainer, you know, there's no reason for people to suffer head injuries and concussions while they're sparring. And as you're probably aware of, in some fights which happened recently, concern was raised that the boxer entered the fight after he had suffered a concussion while training. So are some of these boxers getting concussed in the training camp and they're coming into the fight already concussed and not fully recovered. That's one thing which I think the boxing community has been looking into. A lot of concern has been raised, and I think we should discuss about that.
Yeah. In 1989, Rico Velasquez fought in San Jose for the California Lightweight Championship, and he had been knocked out in training by Ramiro Adames a couple months earlier in Harlingen, Texas, and he went into convulsions. They never told anybody about it. I found out when I did a little expose after the fight, but he went into a fight having been in convulsions just like 6 weeks earlier, and he died. That was unfortunate, but you see this. That was obviously a preventable death.
True. And so, exactly, you know, you should not have a boxer who's concussed entering the ring. Absolutely not. So it's very important that we have some mechanism where, first and foremost, we can identify these concussions which occur during training. The reason I say that identify, because as you and I last spoke, a lot of people still don't realize a concussion, the symptoms of a concussion can be very, very subtle. You know, you walk into a stiff jab, you walk into a right, your bell is rung a little bit. You feel a little off, little glazed look. You know, you feel a little bit subjective headache, a little dizzy. You feel as if I'm slightly off. You know, a lot of people may not realize that might be a mild concussion. You know, the lights are bothering you after that. The sounds are bothering you. You have a little ringing in your ear. Those are concussions. Now, they are very subtle. That's the reason why sometimes they might be missed in the training camp and people are going all out training for a fight. And like I said, first and foremost, you don't want concussions to occur in training. Why keep adding on to the burden of brain damage? All these concussions add up. You can say that some concussions are inevitable during a fight. They are going to occur. Boxing is a contact sport. You are going to see concussions. But why not prevent them while sparring? Why not prevent them during the training camp? Because in the end, they all add up. It's the total number of concussions which is going to determine what happens to this boxer's health long after his or her career is over.
Okay, Doc, Dr. Nitin Seti is our guest. I got to ask you about the world of mixed martial arts and the UFC especially. They don't throw in the towel at all, Doc. I mean, they're fighting these guys like they were just pieces of meat thrown out there until you just like they're death match after death match. And unfortunately, this isn't professional wrestling where guys really aren't getting that hurt. These guys are getting hurt. These are real death matches. So are you seeing any residual effects of these guys getting kicked in the head and being choked out, that kind of stuff? Is it different from boxing? Is it more severe than boxing, or is it just look worse than boxing?
I think, Pedro, that's a good question. It's hard to answer that. You know, MMA is still quite a recent sport as compared to boxing. Boxing, you know, it's been around for a longer time. We kind of know the dangers of boxing. MMA, as you're aware of, it's just not hits to the head. There are these chokes, a vascular choke. You know, there are all these submissions by different types of submissions. So exactly how much was the injury burden? I think the data is still coming out. But what I always say whenever I talk about boxing, MMA, and I have boxed, I love the sport of boxing, I'm passionate about it, is that nobody can defend boxing by saying boxing is good for the brain. as a community of people who like boxing, who promote boxing, we are passionate about boxing, all of us should acknowledge that the risk that boxing poses to the health of these athletes. Once we acknowledge that, then we should try to figure out how can we make the sport more safe. I think that's a sensible thing to do, whether it's boxing or MMA.
Okay. Is a smaller glove the answer in boxing? In other words, is it better to take one sharp blow and have your bell rung than to take 90 softer blows?
It's a good question, Pedro, and I don't know the answer. You know, there are people who give me I'm a student of boxing too, and I've asked this question to trainers, people who, you know, professional boxers. You know, with respect to this training, I can what we have recommended recently in an article we wrote is that sparring should always be done with 16 ounces gloves. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's probably the best thing to do it. Exception is big heavyweights who may use an 18-ounce glove. under 150 pounds, you may use a 14-ounce glove. Use gloves which are made by a good manufacturer. You know, those are the things which you can do, simple things which protect you from head injuries during sparring and training.
Wow. You brought it all up there. I mean, the gloves, I used to wear the 14-ounce gloves, and they were custom-made for my hand. I had a guy making gloves for me. The great Flory Flores, Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay said that the greatest gloves in the history of boxing were the Flores boxing gloves made in Burlingame, California, and Ray Flores and Ali were tight through the 1960 National Golden Gloves, and then Everlast came along and wrote Muhammad Ali a bigger check.
You know the history of boxing better than me, Pedro.
To an extent, a little bit. I miss Ray Flores. He had a bar. He used to make these boxing gloves in a garage in Burlingame, California, which is about 30 miles from San Francisco. And he would make these boxing gloves in his garage in the back of near his house in Burlingame, California. He was also a bar owner, so he was a character, no doubt about that. And Cassius Clay and Muhammad Ali loved him, no doubt about that. Now, back to questions for Dr. Netanseti, of course, our brain expert. Now, I got to ask you about transgender athletes. Now, I'm of the opinion that men are men physically, and when they cross over to females, they seem to be annihilating female competition in combat sports. But yet, when you put it the other way around and have women transforming to men, they don't seem to win.
Yeah, so, you know, the transgender athletes, should they participate in combat sports? You know, there's a lot of ongoing debate about this, you know, and you can kind of, the way I look at it is, let's assume you have a transgender woman and she's fighting against a cisgender woman. So a transgender woman is basically somebody who was biologically born a male and she has transformed into a woman now, and she's going to fight a woman who was born a woman and is a woman. Now, concern is raised that the transgender woman in this case, she has by the time the professional career starts, she has already acquired the bony structure, the musculature of being the male, because puberty has set in. So if you let a transgender woman fight a cisgender woman, you're worried the fact, like you said, that, you know, that's not a fair competition. You're worried about the health and safety of the cisgender woman. Now, you can try to say, well, you know, the flip side, let's assume you have a transgender man fighting a cisgender man. That means a person biologically was a woman and now he has transformed into a male. Okay. Again, and he's fighting a person who's born a male and is still a male. Now, the problem is raised is by the time he transforms into a male, puberty has set in, you know, by the time he launches his professional career. So he still has the musculature, the skeleton of a woman. And so now you're worried about this transgender man because you're worried about the fact that the cisgender man might have more advantage. So I think the way to look at this is, how can we try to make sure that, you know, there's a level playing field? So in the end, what we all want is we want two equally skilled and matched athletes competing in the ring or cage at a level playing field. Okay, so you don't want to have health, you don't want to have health concerns and safety concerns for any of those two combatants. So I think those are important issues which combat sports will have to deal with.
Okay.
You know, what I do strongly feel is transgender rights are an important issue. And, you know, the combat sports community, like you are talking about it, we should talk about them. We should support transgender rights. You know, we should support the gender identity of an individual, you know, not discriminate against them. But how do we go about making sure that it's safe to do this? That's something where we have to study the science, and the science will give us answers. How do we approach this? Should we allow it? Should we not allow it? And if we allow it, how do we ensure that it remains a fair, competitive contest and is safe for both the combatants?
Doc, I got to cut you off on that. Dr. Netanseti, our guest, no doubt about that. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you in a few weeks, Doc.
You're welcome, Pedro. Take good care.
The great Dr. Netanseti, of course, Mr. Brain Doctor on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Anything is boxing, though. I don't know what you do for a living, but pretty sure ain't nobody punching you all in your eye. I watched one fight. Roy Jones got hit so hard, my TV moved. He was asleep like he got knocked out of the club. The ref was like 241, 242. Roy was snoring. He was really knocked out. He was laying there so long, they had to start another fight. Roy was still there. Fighters had to dance around Roy.
The Tower of Power Superstroke Band, of course, Doc Kupka's side band when he isn't doing his thing with the mighty Tower of Power. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look at the world of boxing, MMA. Of course, Canelo Alvarez looks like he's going to be taking on Caleb Plant, who holds the last, I think, holds the IBF belt at 168 pounds. Plant 21-0, 12 KOs. Looks like that fight's going to take place sometime in September. I think it was September 18th to be exact. I'll get that date a little bit later. But the bottom line is Canelo Alvarez in action a fortnight ago, back in action in September. And he may fight again in November. So he's an active guy, no doubt about that. Now, we take it from the West Coast to the East Coast and bring in boxing's PhD. I'm talking about Mr. Socrates Palmer. And Soc, who's Greg Louganis?
Greg Louganis was an Olympic hero for the United States, Greek descent from your neck of the woods, El Cajon, California, I believe. And he was a diver and then one of the first athletes to openly come out as being gay.
Okay, but you compared Malik Scott to him. So what, I don't understand. Malik Scott, Greg Louganis, fill me in.
Well, in the sense that I firmly believe, and I think most people that watched that fight feel that Malik Scott took a dive, as they used to call it. You know, he put his good buddy Deontay Wilder over with a shot that really didn't seem like it landed. You know, it was pretty suspicious, and he went down like someone that was expected to. You know, someone who made an arrangement prior to the fight. I'll put it at that.
I remember the Atlantic City Express with Bruce Seldon in a fight with Mike Tyson. I think he went down from a shot to the shoulder.
That's a good one. Absolutely. and more recently, the guy that from New Jersey that fought Lara, LaManna, he got hit with a shot that I hope his rotator cuff is okay. I mean, they buried it on Fox right before the Ruiz Areola pay-per-view. So,
okay, I mentioned the aforementioned, I just brought up Caleb Plant, of course, the IBF title holder at 168 pounds, 21 in zip, 12 KOs. Canelo Alvarez, 56, 1 and 2, 38 wax. Is this guy lunch meat for Canelo, or is this a fight?
I think it's going to be a competitive fight up until the first bell rings. You know, I think Caleb Plant's going to talk a good talk. I think there's going to be a certain sector of boxing geeks that always like to give extra credit to a guy who's a quote unquote great boxer. But Caleb Plant, I think, is no match for Canelo Alvarez. I think Canelo will walk through him. And I really believe that Caleb Plant is, I mean, more power to him if he gets $10 million, but I think he's almost making himself, an offer. He's pricing himself out.
Listen,
in terms of his demands.
If they offer him $1 million, he should do it because that's more money he's ever made in his life.
He turned down six.
He turned down
before.
Six. Oh,
so, I mean, a couple of months back, you know. So, let's see what happens. I mean, hopefully they do make the fight happen. I mean, I guess it's negotiations, right? You know, DeBell and his people and Al Haymon will do right by everybody. I mean, this is a chance to be on the biggest stage for at least one night. And then, you know, you figure that the later in the calendar year that it happens, the crowd, I mean, you're going to make some bread, believe me. You know,
Boxing.
Caleb Plant will be able to take care of his family.
Okay. Boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer, is our guest. Of course, he usually comes to us on Saturday, the Saturday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, Saturday, 11 a.m. Pacific time for an hour on many of these same stations. Of course, live on iHeartRadio and Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 217. And, of course, the Twitch.tv, U.S. Sports Byline, USA channel when it's working. But the bottom line is we've got him back Sunday because last night a dramatic fight took place, and that the and then that the entire world 140-pound championship was on the line, no matter what sanctioning body you're with. All four of them, all four of the major bodies were there. I'm talking about WBA, WBC, IBF, and WBO. Of course, hooking this up was Josh Taylor. He put them all together. He's now the Ring Magazine as well. Champion 18-0 with a 12-round unanimous nod over Jose Ramirez. The scores were 114-112. And before the scores came in, Boxing PhD sent me a scorecard, 114-112. He almost lost it, Taylor, with complacency, huh?
I think so. I mean, maybe you can make a good argument that Kenny Bayless helped Ramirez survive after one of the knockdowns.
Wait, time out. What was that all about there? What was going on there?
I don't know, man. I think Kenny's lost a little bit off the fastball. I think it's time for him to kind of ease his way out of the mainstream fights. I mean, it's not the first time that he's kind of been inept, you know, and I've heard, as a matter of fact, when one of your texts, it's either corruption or incompetence. So, you know, Kenny Bayless did not have his best night, you know, and I don't want to dump on the guy. And, he's been in the sport for a long time, but.
I knew him and his brother. They're both from Northern California. His brother's from up here in Northern California, okay? I can't remember. His brother had a funny name. But, they've been around a long time. They were cornermen. They were inspectors and that kind of good stuff. But there's a guy that was part of, they had a singing group with Tony Weeks. Tony Weeks was the lead singer and he left another referee down there in Nevada. But they had a singing group of about four or five of these guys. And the best referee among the bunch here, I can't remember his name, but he only gets one fight every once in a while. God, his name's killing me. But the bottom line is, Kenny Bayless is a go-to guy in Nevada.
It seems that way, you know. I think that something needs to happen, you know. I guess the more, like I said, I don't want to kick a dog while he's down, but maybe the more media criticism he gets, the more the Vegas Commission, you know, looks at it and he did not have a great night. And Josh Taylor, not to get off the original question, I thought Josh Taylor kind of got a little, you know, complacent. Like you said, you know, I thought he could have stepped in the gas a little bit. And looking at the punch stats, it was a real dead even fight. And I'm not a big CompuBox person, but I believe Taylor only landed 11 more punches. But those knockdowns were brutal. I mean, you can see, it took the fight out of Ramirez, and credit to Ramirez for dusting himself off. Footwork was not the best. He got caught square both times, and Josh Taylor really imposed a physicality that I didn't think he had in his arsenal. You know, I thought that if Taylor were to win, he'd have to really outwork him, and it wasn't the case. His punch output wasn't like that of when he fought Prograis. You know, he really used his physicality, was sneaky in there, borderline bending the rules a little bit, and it was a spectacular performance. You know, I thought the right decision happened. The scores were, like you said earlier, I was right on board with 114-112, and the world is the oyster for the Scotsman.
Okay. Robert Garcia's guy failed boxing 101's basics last night. I mean, pulling out of a clinch with your hands down, your chin up in the air. I can go on and on, but is Robert Garcia destined to be the guy that's supplying the championship opponent, per se, and not the champion?
Ooh, no. I mean, Rob's had a good run, you know, aside, you know, his own brother, of course, Mikey, and he had a good run with Ramirez. It's not to say that Ramirez is done. I mean, just, you know, lost to the better fighter. And Robert's had, he's also got maybe the best, the future of the sport in this stable as well, Ortiz. So I think, you know, you got to give credit to Taylor and his coach, Ben Davidson. Ben Davidson is starting to emerge as, in that same, realm when you start talking about elite cornermen, you know, obviously first known for his work with, Tyson Fury. And then now he's got the undisputed best fighter at 140 pounds.
You know, Nacho Berristain used to be the best guy in the corner, I thought. He was a Mexican professor, trainer, manager, that kind of good stuff. It looks like Eddie Reynoso's becoming a pretty astute guy in the corner there. The kid.
Yeah. That's, you know what? It's a lot of it is, you know, who you bring to the dance. You know, sometimes there's certain guys that you never hear of that are just excellent trainers, you know, great motivators, great strategists. And they, some guys that you figure that are just lucky enough to have the great fighter, you know, but, Reynoso's building a great reputation for himself. Let's see how he does with the rest of, Andy Ruiz's career. And of course, he's got the number one guy in the sport in Canelo. I think that doesn't hurt either.
Shakur Stevenson, superstar or not? What do you, has he got the potential?
Well, he's certainly being managed very carefully. That's one thing. You know, he, I'm still waiting for him to get tested. You know, I think from what you see, he's got all the physical tools. He's moving up in weight. I like the fact that he's fighting at a little bit more entertaining pace, you know, instead of defense first, because let's face it. I mean, offense sells in all sports and you know, I know he's a work in progress. Guys like Lomachenko kind of spoiled everybody because you're thinking this guy comes from the Olympics and, you know, 10 fight, you know, less than 10 fights, he's in the conversation with the best pound for pound fighters in the world. So I believe he's being managed correctly, and only time will tell with Shakur Stevenson. But there's a lot of other guys that he's going to have to get through. You know, is he ever going to meet up, with, the kid that destroyed, Valdez, you know, I mean, there's fights out there, you know, and when are they going to match him up?
You know, Stevenson's taking on a guy named Jeremiah Nakathila, who's 21-1, but I was looking at his resume. He hasn't fought too many guys better than you or me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's really, I mean, he's getting a pass, you know. I mean, Andre Ward, we know, is, you know, is very influential in him, and he's got James Prince. I mean, sooner or later, he's really fighting subpar competition that I don't think does anything for his career. And, you know, as far as him being a ticket seller, it's going to be a hard out for him, you know, because it was recently, I believe, he revealed that he's half Puerto Rican. I think that'll help, you know, in terms of being a big ticket draw in the East Coast, you know, but to be a star, you got to put asses in seats, right? And knock people out. And
you brought up James Prince of he was with Rap-A-Lot Records, and he I went down to Houston, and he was not a guy I ever wanted to cross. Do you know what I mean by that?
James Prince has a reputation of being a real menacing figure in the underworld, you know, to put it lightly. And even at an age, he's considered now an OG, you know, and if any further clarifications, you can ask Mr. Leonard Ellerbe and Floyd Mayweather about James Prince's reputation.
He sort of outbluffed them, didn't he?
He outbluffed them, and, you know, he showed him that it's more than a game, you know. From the famous story is that Mayweather's people were pistol whipped in the gym, you know, and I'll leave it at that, you know. Apparently, you know.
Boxing's PhD, the one, the only, Socrates Palmer. Of course, he comes to us on Saturdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Saturday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Say hello to Sophie. Say hello to the young man, Sebastian. Of course, say hello to your lovely wife, man. She allows me to come into your world once or twice a week, and I thank her very much.
Thank you, my brother. Appreciate the time, and all the best to you always.
Boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer, on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
All conditions, you're mine.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
I'm so glad you're mine. You're fabulous, to say the least.
I'm not saying that Asian people look alike, but you know what's got to be the easiest job in the world? Has got to be one of those police sketch artists in Hong Kong. I mean, come on. No matter who you decide to draw.
That's the guy.
Of course that's the guy. He's 5'1", he's got a haircut like Mo, and he's Chinese. What have we narrowed it down to? 1 billion people? We should find him by sunset.
This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing. The MMA being brought back by the mighty Tower of Power. Ain't nothing stopping us now. Circa 1976, the first album on CBS Records, I believe. You are tuned to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the Sunday edition, wrapping things up here. Of course, my name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to the show. If you're listening to us for the very first time, let me welcome you to the Ring Talk family. If you've been here a while, you know what time it is. Bottom line is Teofimo Lopez, of course, going to do his thing in a couple of weeks. George Kambosos, he's looking to stop Kambosos and make a statement. I think he'll need to as far as 135-pound supremacy is concerned, because there's other guys at 130 like the aforementioned Devin Haney, who's going to try to make a mark next week with Jorge Linares. He says this fight with Linares will prove that he's one of boxing's best. Not one of the best lightweights, but one of boxing's best. We'll see. That's going to take place next week on The Zone. So Devin Haney and Jorge Linares next week on The Zone. Check it out. If you don't have The Zone yet, like my buddy down there, superstar Bill O'Neill, of course, Grandmaster Bill doesn't have The Zone. He watches fights on ESPN, and he calls me and says, "What's happening in the other fights?" Well, you got to know what's happening. So to know what's happening, you got to have both The Zone and ESPN Plus. That's just the way it is. And you maybe Showtime to an extent, but I guess you can bootleg the Showtime fights. But you can't bootleg all the fights on The Zone and all the fights on ESPN. Plus, ESPN has the UFC if you want. Speaking of the UFC, last night they had four fights on their main card. Four of the five fights went to a decision. That's not the way the UFC fans want to see it. But the bottom line is, I think that's starting to wane as far as its attractiveness is concerned. Even though they generated $890 million in the year 2020, I think the UFC has maybe seen its best days. I kid you not. We'll talk about that in depth on next week's show. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, of course, live on SiriusXM Satellite Channel 217, iHeartRadio, SportsByline.com, and 1,000 other internet platforms. Listen, you could be doing a million things right now, but the fact you're listening to me and Ring Talk Live Worldwide, well, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Until next time, my name is Pedro Fernandez, and this is Ring Talk. Yeah.